There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves, or lose our ventures.
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot in Agatha Christie's Taken at the Flood.
It was the autumn of 1944, and the Blitz had returned to London. But now it was the flying bombs and the rockets, and no one could tell where or when they might fall. On that particular night, I was sitting in my club. I'm not what is called a clubable person, but since I live in London, it is necessary to have a club, Nespa.
All my old friends seem to be popping off one after another, dropping like flies.
Every club has its resident bore, and mine was no exception. The other members had taken refuge behind their newspapers, but I was hanging on to Major Porter's every word, grateful for anything that would distract me from the air raid.
Gordon Clode's the latest to go. Notice in the Times this morning, on October the 5th, as a result of enemy action. No address given. It's just round the corner from my place. One of those big houses on the top of Camden Hill. You know where I mean.
Yes, Major, I know.
Poor old devil. He'd only just got back from the States. Been out there on some government scheme or other. Uh-huh. Got married while he was over there. She was a young widow, young enough to be his daughter. A Mrs. Underhay. As a matter of fact, I knew her first husband out in Nigeria. Did I ever tell you I'd been out in Nigeria?
Yes, Major. You have mentioned the fact from time to time.
It's a funny thing, these rocket bombs. You never know what they're going to do. Uh-huh. This one blew in the basement and ripped off the roof. First floor was left practically intact. There were six people in the house, cook and butler and a maid, Gordon Clode and his wife and her brother, a commando type. Mm-hmm. The brother preferred to take his chance on the first floor and survived. The rest of them were sheltering in the basement, and Clode and the servants were killed instantly. But his wife survived, God knows how.
And this Gordon Clode, he was a wealthy man?
Must have been worth well over a million. Oh. And he'd only been married a few weeks. So the girl can't be more than 25. And now she's a widow for the second time. At any rate, that's what she thinks.
What exactly do you mean by that, Major?
Well, as I said, I knew her first husband when I was out in Nigeria. Nice chap, district commissioner at one time. The girl was an actress. He'd met her in Cape Town when she was out there with some touring company. Down on her luck, by all accounts. Rather pretty, I knew. She got carried away by the thought of living out in the great wide open spaces. She had no idea what she was letting herself in for, of course.
But she was not happy?
She hated the bush. She was terrified of the natives, and she was bored to death. Mm-hmm. Couldn't stick it at any price. It hit poor Underhay pretty hard. But he did the decent thing. He sent the girl home and agreed to give her a divorce. He was a funny, old-fashioned kind of chap in some ways, particularly in his ideas about the ladies. And he was an RC into the bargain. Didn't hold with divorce. He said to me, there are other ways of giving a woman her freedom. Now, look here, old boy. I said, don't do anything foolish. No woman in the world is worth you putting a bullet through your head. Mm. Yes, that one was a bit close for comfort. Where was I? Oh, yes. He said that wasn't his idea at all. He'd got no relatives to bother about. If a report of his death got back, that'd be enough to make Rosaline, that was her name, a widow. And what about you, I said. Well, he replies, maybe a Mr. Enoch Arden will turn up somewhere 1,000 miles away and start life anew.
I'm sorry, I do not understand. Who is this... Enoch Arden.
Sorry, old chap, you wouldn't know, being a foreigner and all that. No, he's a character in a poem by Tennyson. Ah. Happily married, takes a job as a boatswain on a long voyage, gets shipwrecked, and nothing is heard of him for years. His wife marries again. Eventually, he finds his way back to England, but when he discovers about his wife, he decides to keep quiet and doesn't reveal who he is. Not to tell her, never to let her know.
I will make a point of reading it.
Anyway, to get back to Andahe, 6 months after our conversation, I heard that he died of a fever up in the bush somewhere. The headman came back with a few words scrawled in Andahe's writing, saying his natives had done all that they could, but he was afraid he was pegging out. So there you have it. Maybe Andahe's buried up country in the middle of equatorial Africa, but maybe he isn't.
Oh.
And if he isn't, the recently widowed Mrs. Claude is in for a bit of a shock. No right to the million she's got her claws on, and a bigamist on top of it all, and serve her right. She sounds like a regular little gold digger. Oh, my goodness, that's torn it.
What is the matter?
That was Jeremy Claude, Gordon Claude's brother.
Oh.
How was I to know he was hiding himself away behind his newspaper? The fellow's a solicitor or something. I hope he won't have me up for defamation of character. Oh, how very unfortunate.
But nothing came of it, and it was to be nearly 2 years before I heard anything about the Claude family again. They lived in Walmsley Vale, an old world and rather run-down little town 30 miles outside London. They had all of them, in their various ways, been dependent upon the wealthy Gordon Claude, but the full implications of his leaving his entire fortune to his young widow did not begin to sink in until after the war was over.
I can't get over you not being in Wren's uniform anymore. You always look so smart in it.
Well, to tell you the truth, Mums, I never want to set eyes on it again. I can't tell you how marvellous it is just to be able to slouch about in a tweed skirt and a jumper, though I wouldn't mind being able to buy a few new clothes. I always depended on Uncle Gordon for that.
The trouble is that we all depended on him for everything. We just took it for granted he'd always be around to help us out. If only he'd come straight down here when he got back to England instead of staying up in London.
I suppose none of us ever imagined that he'd get married at his age. We thought we were all the family he needed.
You make it sound as if we were all idlers and sponges, Lynn. It was never like that. After all, your Uncle Jeremy's done very well for himself in his solicitor's business, and Lionel has his doctor's practice.
But we knew there was always money available if we wanted it. Over and over again, he told us there was no need to stint and save. His checks always came in regularly to provide us with our little luxuries.
And he was the one who encouraged me to stay on here after your father died. If only I'd known that something like this might happen, I could have moved to a smaller house. Now it's just a terrible struggle to make ends meet. I really don't know how we're going to manage.
How did he happen to meet this Rosaline woman? You never mentioned her in your letters.
He came across her on some boat on the way back from South America. After all those years, after all those secretaries and typists and housekeepers who tried to get him into their clutches.
She's good-looking, I suppose.
Well, dear, I think myself she's rather a silly face. Of course, the poor girl was blitzed, and it's my opinion she's never quite recovered from the shock of it all. She's a mass of nerves, and sometimes she looks positively half-witted. I can't imagine she could ever have made much of a companion for poor Gordon. And then, of course, I hate to say it, but she's not a lady.
What does that matter nowadays?
It matters in the country, dear. I simply mean that she isn't one of us. Of course, we've all gone out of our way to be kind and polite and welcome her amongst us for Gordon's sake.
And she's living at Furrowbank?
Well, where else was there for her to go when she came out of the nursing home? She's been staying there with her brother ever since.
What's he like?
Dreadful young man. Rude.
What's his name?
David Hunter. He's Irish. Of course, they're not people one has ever heard of. She was a widow when she met Gordon, a Mrs. Underhay. One can't help asking oneself what kind of a widow would be likely to be travelling from South America in wartime. One can't help thinking she was probably on the lookout for a rich husband.
And so she got the lot?
Everything. Gordon had always given us to understand we would all be taken care of if anything were to happen to him. But when he married, he made a will entirely in favour of this woman. I'm sure if he'd lived, he would have made certain we would have been generously looked after. But as things are, God, just look at all those bills. Investments aren't producing what they used to, of course, and taxes are going up all the time. I don't want to burden you with all this just when you've come home, but I simply don't know what I'm going to do.
Couldn't Gordon's widow, what did you say her name was?
Rosaline.
Couldn't she help?
We've got no right to anything. Anything at all.
You've got a moral right, surely.
It wouldn't be very nice, dear, asking a favour of somebody one doesn't like very much.
So what about the rest of the family? Can't they help? Or are we all in the same boat?
Oh, dear. How can I possibly know? Your cousin Rowley seems to be keeping his head above water, but farmers always do, don't they? If you take my advice, you'll get on and marry him before somebody else snaps him up.
Yes, Mums.
Your Uncle Gordon always used to say you were made for each other.
Yes, I remember.
And as for how the rest of the family are doing, well, I can't help noticing that your Uncle Jeremy has begun to look very old and grey all of a sudden.
Is anything the matter, Jeremy?
What do you mean, Francis? What should be the matter?
You've barely touched your food. I would rather you told me.
Oh, he'll have to know, of course, sooner or later. I'm afraid you made a bad bargain, Francis.
Is it money?
Yes, it's money.
Shall we have to sell up everything? Is the firm going smash? My dear, do tell me. I can't go on guessing.
We went through rather a bad crisis 2 years ago when young Williams absconded and there were heavy losses out in the Far East.
Never mind the whys. They are so unimportant.
Well, I was relying on Gordon to see us straight. I always relied on him. His death was a catastrophe for me.
Shall we be bankrupt?
It's a good deal worse than that.
Embezzlement or something of that kind.
Well, I've drawn on funds that were committed to my charge. So far, I've been able to cover my tracks.
And now it's all going to come out.
Unless I can find the necessary money. Very quickly.
So stupid that I haven't anything of my own. Her father put paid to any chance of that.
There's your marriage settlement. But I'm afraid that's gone, too. I'm sorry, Francis. As I said, you made a bad bargain.
What on earth do you mean by that?
You've always been a most loyal, devoted wife, my dear. But I can hardly flatter myself that you would have accepted me under different circumstances.
You mean that Lord Trenton's daughter wouldn't have stooped to marry humble Jeremy Claude if he hadn't saved her father from the wolves and from the stewards of the jockey club? I married you because I was in love with you.
I can't imagine what you could possibly have seen in me. And now...
Let's get things clear. You've fallen foul of the law. You may be prosecuted, go to prison even. Well, I don't exactly come from a respectable moral family... My father may have been charming, but he was really a bit of a crook and a thoroughly bad hat. My cousin Charles narrowly escaped prosecution and was bundled off to the colonies. I don't suppose I'm particularly straight myself. There just hasn't been any opportunity to be otherwise. But what I have got is plenty of courage, and I'm loyal.
Oh, my dear.
So, what are we going to do? I suppose you've done all the obvious things, like a mortgage on this house.
I'm afraid so.
Then who can we touch? I suppose there's only one possibility. Gordon's widow, the dark Rosaline.
Oh, it would have to be a large sum. And the money can't come out of the capital. It's only hers for life.
So what happens when she dies?
Well, it comes to Gordon's next of kin. Myself, Lionel, Adela, and Morris's son, Rowley.
Not that it matters much. We'll all be dead and buried before she's even middle-aged. How old is she? 25? 26?
Well, we might ask her for a loan, I suppose, as members of the family. But there must be no suggestion of urgency.
The trouble is, we don't really know what she's like. And in any case, it's not Rosaline we shall have to deal with. That brother of hers has got her completely under his thumb.
A most unattractive young man.
Oh, no. He's attractive, all right. And rather unscrupulous, I should imagine. But then, as far as that goes, I'm unscrupulous, too. We're not going to be beaten, Jeremy. There's got to be some way, even if I have to rob a bank.
But I always imagine that farmers have done rather well out of the war, really.
It won't last. The men who've come back from the fighting aren't interested in working on small farms anymore. And they'll expect a pretty big rise in their wages. It's the end of the road for people like me. In the future, the only farmers who are going to survive are those who've got the resources to go in for it in a big way. That's where Uncle Gordon's money would have come in. He'd have backed me. He promised he would.
And now?
And now that wife of his goes off up to London and spends a couple of £1,000 on a mink coat. Well, I'll just have to manage as best I can, I suppose.
We've managed pretty well so far.
Yes. It's strange the way things have worked out. I've been stuck down here on the farm all through the war, while you've been all over the world. I imagine you won't find it easy to settle down again.
I don't see it that way at all.
Then you haven't changed your mind?
I still want to marry you, if that's what you mean. Unless you've changed your mind.
Oh, I've not changed. Nothing changes down on the farm. You should know that.
All right, then. Let's get married.
Should we set a date for the wedding?
Whenever you like.
June or thereabouts?
Yes. Why not? What's she like?
What's who like?
This Rosaline woman. Mum says she's half-witted.
Well, intellect isn't exactly her strong point. But I think she only seems so stupid because she's being so frightfully careful.
Careful about what?
Mainly, I imagine, about her accent. She's got a bit of a brogue, you know. But you'll be able to see for yourself this evening at Aunt Kathy's party. It's in your honour, you know, to celebrate your return. Though, I should warn you that Aunt Kathy is battier than ever.
I shouldn't have thought that was possible. I've always wondered how Uncle Lionel came by her.
Yes, she probably materialized from the spirit world. She must be a terrible embarrassment to him.
How lovely and brown you are, my dear. All that time in Egypt, I suppose. Oh, I can't tell you how I envy you. Did you manage to read that book on the pyramid prophecies that I sent you?
Well, you see, Aunt Kathy, I really didn't have much time.
I wish you'd been able to find the time to put some of the incantations into practice, being on the spot, so to speak. I was absolutely fascinated by the chapter on Hathor, the great celestial cow, and the way in which she was incarnated in the system. It really explains everything, don't you think?
I really don't know very much about that kind of thing.
Oh, once you're drawn into it, you won't be able to resist. Oh, but here is dear Rosaline. Rosaline, this is my niece Lynn, Adela's daughter.
How do you do? Nice to meet you. This is my brother, David Hunter.
Hello.
No.
And do you like living at Firebank?
Oh, I think it's a lovely house.
Poor old Gordon did himself pretty well. No expense spared. Pity he didn't draw the line at those ghastly glass tables and chairs.
Yes, they are rather an acquired taste.
So, you're the wren who's just back from the wars.
Yes, it's good to be home again.
Now, let's all go into supper. I think it's better than calling it dinner. People don't expect so much. Just as well in times like these. Oh, you must sit next to me, Jeremy. I want to hear all about this Mrs. Lester, who's come to live in Walmsley East.
Yes.
I gather she's an expert in spirit writing.
So, this is where you've got to. Indulging in a little solitary vice.
Aunt Kathy simply can't abide smoking at table. I've been dying for a cigarette all through dinner.
So have I. You into all this ritual incantation and Ouija boarding that your aunt goes on about?
Hardly. There doesn't seem much place for that kind of thing in the modern world. Particularly after the atomic bomb. Rather an over-efficient way of disposing of your enemies.
Give me the good old days of black magic. Wax figures, spells at the turning of the moon, killing off your neighbor's cattle.
You really don't believe there was such a thing as black magic?
Perhaps not. But at any rate, people did at least try to do something, unlike nowadays. After all, you and your family can't do much about Rosaline and myself, can you?
It's a little late in the day for that.
I imagine you're all pretty smug about expecting to get the old boy's loot.
You must remember, we've been taught to think so for years.
And now you've learned that nothing's safe. So what are you going to do about it?
Buy some wax and practice black magic.
Oh, no. I'm sure your methods will be much more modern and efficient. But you won't win. And to warn you, don't try to do down Rosaline. What do you think of her?
She's very lovely. But she doesn't seem to be enjoying herself much.
She's scared. She's always been rather scared. She drifts into things and doesn't know what it's all about. Shall I tell you about Rosaline?
If you like.
I do like. She started by being stage-struck and drifted into the theatre. She wasn't any good, of course. She got into a third-rate touring company that was going out to South Africa. She rather liked the idea of South Africa, but the company got stranded in Cape Town and she drifted into marriage with a British government official working in Nigeria. She didn't like Nigeria, and I don't think she liked her husband much. Fortunately, he died of fever and Rosaline got a small pension.
And then she ran into Uncle Gordon.
Don't be so impatient. When the war started, she drifted onto a boat for South America. She didn't like South America very much, so she drifted onto another boat, and there she met Gordon Claude and told him all about her sad life. So they got married in New York and came back to England, and a little later he was killed by a bomb, and she was left a large house and a lot of expensive jewellery and an immense income.
Oh, it's nice the story has a happy ending.
Yes. Anyone who gets at her will have me to deal with. And I know a good many ways of making war. And some of them would not appeal to the Claude family at all.
Where on earth have you been? Everyone's been wondering where you'd got to.
Just having a cigarette out in the garden.
With David Hunter?
Yes, he was there.
But what on earth were you talking about all that time?
Nothing in particular. He was telling me about his sister.
Yes, in some detail.
Where's everyone got to?
Aunt Kathy's taken them all off to demonstrate some kind of spirit-writing apparatus. And everyone's being as nice as pie to Rosaline. I wonder why.
Good morning, Mrs. Claude. I hope you don't mind my dropping in like this.
Oh, no. Please, do sit down, Mrs. Marchmont.
Oh, such a lovely day. All my early tulips are out. Are yours?
I don't know. I hadn't noticed.
Oh, of course. You have so many gardeners. They attend to all that, I imagine. But I didn't come to talk about gardens. I'll come straight to the point.
Oh.
I was wondering whether you could help me.
Help you? How?
Things are rather difficult, you see. I'm overdrawn at the bank. I owe bills everywhere, and the rates haven't been paid yet. I only seem to have half the income I used to have. You see, Gordon always used to help. He gave me an allowance, paid into the bank every quarter. He said not to worry, and of course, I never did. Everything seemed so simple when he was alive.
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. I never thought. I'll talk to David about it.
Couldn't you just give me a check? Now?
I suppose I could. There is a checkbook in the desk somewhere. Oh, here it is. How much shall I make it out for?
Are you really going to marry that country clodhopper?
Of course I'm going to marry him.
How can you throw yourself away on such an idiot?
What you don't seem to understand is that I love him.
Yeah, I wonder. We all see pictures of ourselves as we want to be. You see yourself settling down with Rowley at Long Willows, but that's not the real you.
How on earth can you know what the real me is? We only met the other night. And what's the real you, if it comes to that? What do you want?
I wanted safety. Time to get over the war. But now I don't know what I want. I just wish you'd never turned up here. I was reasonably happy until I met you.
And aren't you happy now?
Look, Lynn, I... Who the devil's that going through the gate into Thoroughbank?
It looks like Francis.
Yeah. Going to pay a call on my little sister. And guess what she's after? Your mother has already dropped in this morning.
What on earth did she want?
Money. What else?
Money?
She got it all right.
How much?
£500. I wonder how much Francis is going to ask for. It's hardly safe to leave Rosaline alone for 5 minutes. The poor girl doesn't know how to say no.
Have there been others?
Your Aunt Kathy touched her for 250. Her mediums and seances, I suppose. She didn't want her husband to know. She hadn't realized that the worthy Lionel had already applied for a loan himself.
What must you think of us?
But something tells me that Francis is after really big money. So if you'll excuse me, I'd better go and put a spoke in her wheel.
Oh, David, I'm so glad you've come back. I've just been explaining to Rosalind how Gordon's death left us in rather a hole.
You see, David...
For years, Jeremy had been negotiating a rather important deal which Gordon had promised to back, and now, of course...
How much?
10,000.
Oh, that's rather a lot of money.
Oh, I know that. I wouldn't have come to you if it weren't such a fearfully difficult sum to raise. Of course, Jeremy would never have gone into the deal at all without Gordon's encouragement, and his death came at a most unfortunate time.
Leaving you all out in the cold? After a sheltered life under his wing.
You put things so picturesquely.
Rosaline can't touch the capital, you know. Only the income. And she's paying something like 19 and 6 in the pound income tax.
Oh, I do understand. But it could be managed, couldn't it?
It could be managed, but it won't be.
David!
What do you think Rosalind is, a milch cow? All of you are at her, begging and cadging and scrounging. But what are you doing behind her back? Sneering at her, looking down your aristocratic noses at her, wishing her dead.
That's not true.
Isn't it? We're sick of you all. You'll get no money out of us, so you can stop whining about it.
I'm sorry, Francis. I'm really sorry.
You have said that I resent Rosalind. That is not true. I do not resent Rosalind, but I do resent you. Women must live. Rosalind married a very rich man, years older than herself. Why not? But you, you're living off your sister and living off the fat of the land.
I am protecting her against the family harpies.
I shall remember what you have said, David. Goodbye.
You oughtn't have said those things to her. She's the only one of them that's been kind to me.
Only because she wanted to bleed you of every penny you possess.
Oh, someone's walking over my grave.
You realize it may come to that?
What do you mean?
I mean that 5, 6, 7 people have every reason to hurry into your grave as quickly as they can.
You can't mean that. You wouldn't commit murder. Not nice people like the clothes.
I'm not so sure that it isn't nice people like the clothes who do commit murder. But they won't succeed in getting rid of you while I'm around. They'll have to see me out of the way first.
David, don't say such awful things.
Listen, if I'm ever not here, take care you look after yourself. Life isn't safe, Rosaline. It's damn dangerous. They'll get you, Rosaline. They'll get you just as soon as they have a chance.
In part one of Agatha Christie's Taken at the Flood, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Adela Marchmont, Virginia McKenna, Lynn Marchmont, Susanna Corbett, Francis Claude, Caroline Wilde, Jeremy Claude, Andrew Sachs, Kathy Claude, Elizabeth Proud, Roly Claude, Yvonne Meredith, Rosaline Claude, Fritha Goody, David Hunter, Tom George, Major Porter, Derek Waring. Taken at the Flood is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.